gold and silver have been suppressed for years and years and years. This is going to be the largest non-delivery month COMEX has ever had. Users want metal and they can't have it. That's a problem. The price is irrelevant. What is relevant is whether or not you can get the metal or not. Geopolitically, the world is definitely heating up. There's no question about it. How much silver is in Tomahawk missiles? How much silver is used by the defense industry? Once we go through a failure to deliver, you either have the metal or you don't. And if you don't, you're never going to have it in your lifetime. And financially, your life is ruined. That's it. COMEX silver is done. And COMEX gold is done the same day. The entire system will blow up. And it's been my thesis that silver would be the market that does it, and it looks like that's happening now. You will own nothing and be happy. I know how you're going to own nothing. I'm not sure how you're going to be happy unless they put something in the water. I mean, when people ask me, how much should I put into gold? How much should I put into silver? My answer now is whatever you don't want to lose.
World War III is already happening.
This is a house of cards, and it is in the process of collapsing right now.
You're going to see an economic crash the likes of which we've never seen.
Hi, folks. Canadian Prepper here. Today, I'm joined by Bill Holter, also known as Mr. Gold, market commentator and longtime precious metal voice, known for calling out systemic risk, leverage, and cracks in the financial plumbing. I hope today we're going to talk about gold and silver, what Bill expects in the year ahead. Of course, silver and gold have had a wild run over the last year, and I always try to timestamp where silver and gold were the last time I spoke to a guest. I think with you, it was somewhere in the low 30s, so if people had taken our advice at that point in time, they likely would have doubled, if not tripled, their money by now. Bill, how are you doing and how are you feeling about these markets?
Good. Thanks for having me. I think the markets are in total disarray. What you're watching in the gold and silver market is a complete bifurcation between paper and physical metal. They're becoming two separate markets.
I want to start with kind of going back to first principles and getting your high level analysis of what you think is going on in the markets. We can start anywhere you want. We can start with precious metals. We can start with the divergence from paper and metals. Where would you like to start with this?
We might as well start with the metals. I mean, what you're seeing, particularly in silver, is the supply is not there to meet the demand. Finally, after all these years of anybody who's been in silver for 10, 15, 20 years or more can remember the smash downs of, 3%, 5%, 8%. And that was always done with paper contracts being dumped on the market. The problem is those paper contracts had no silver behind them. And where we are now, we've been in a structural deficit supply and demand for about the last 5 years. And that's finally caught up to the paper markets because you've got investors stepping up and saying, I want my metal. I'm not accepting cash as settlement. I bought this silver contract to have silver delivered. I want it. And that's causing a big problem. Because COMEX and LBMA, you look at their inventories versus what has already come and what looks to come on delivery notices, there's going to be a failure to deliver. I mean, here we are in January. It's a non-delivery month, and we're already at 23 or 25 million ounces to deliver. This is going to be the largest non-delivery month COMEX has ever had.
So they don't have the silver that they have to deliver is what you're trying to say.
Exactly. It's what I've been saying for quite a while now. Nobody listened, but now it's fact.
And so are these deliveries for people who are wanting it for investment purposes or for industrial purposes?
Both. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It could be all one or all the other. It makes no difference. If investors or users want metal and they can't have it, that's a problem. You've got the price of silver up there on your screen behind you. The price is irrelevant. What is relevant is whether or not you can get the metal or not. And once we go through a failure to deliver, you either have the metal or you don't. And if you don't, you're never going to have it in your lifetime. And financially, your life is ruined because your capital is going to be taken away in the paper markets. It's going to be taken away via the great taking.
Do you expect that there's going to be an increased interest on the investment side of things or the industrial side of things? Which of those? Because it seems like we have both right now. Like when I look on some of the actual metals exchanges, they're very low on supply of certain things, and periodically there'll be some metal available in the 100 ounce plus denominations, and that's usually because somebody just sold it to them, but they don't have like very large supplies. So do you expect that there's going to be increased demand for investments, or is it simply that the current demand is not being met? Or are we going to see like more demand in the industrial sector and the investment sector?
Well, it doesn't matter where the demand comes from. Thinking from the standpoint of human beings, when you tell a human being, whether it be an investor or a purchasing manager or whatever, it doesn't matter. If you tell them that they can't have silver or they might not be able to get silver, that's like throwing chum into the water with a bunch of sharks.
Yeah, exactly. If you tell people they can't have it, they're definitely going to want it more. And
want it more.
And I've said that silver is becoming, as it becomes lighter, people are going to want it as an investment even more because it's easier to transport, you know, 100K, a 1,000-ounce bar than it was, you know, a few years ago. So it becomes an even more enticing right. method of a dense store of value.
But it still takes 56, 57 times the weight of gold to transfer that same amount. And the ratio at 56, 57, it's still way too high. I mean, we were jumping up and down with silver gold ratio over 80, over 90. It got as high as 120. It comes out of the ground at less than 10 to 1. So to see a 20 to 1 ratio, that's not crazy talk.
So is this, like I've always been kind of perplexed by the ratio argument. So is the argument that because there's a geological ratio of 10 to 1, that at some point the markets have to approximate that?
Well, it speaks to availability or scarcity. I mean, if only 9 ounces come out of the ground to every 1 ounce of gold, why is gold, or why was gold instead of 9 to 1, why did it get to 120 to 1? And the answer is paper markets. That's why.
So does that mean that gold could potentially come down to reach that ratio?
One way or the other, the ratio is going to come down. I don't think gold is going to come down. Laughable thinking that gold is going to come down from here. We live in a fiat world. Nothing is backed. Nothing is guaranteed. This fiat world is the most highly indebted by on any ratio or any measure you want to look at. We're more indebted. There's more failure risk than ever. And gold and silver, they cannot bankrupt. They cannot default. So they're the natural lifeboat for people wanting to try to protect their wealth into something that can't bankrupt. By definition, that's gold and silver.
Do you pay a lot of attention to the industrial demand? Because I know like a lot of investors from a fundamentals sure. point of view, they want to know what exactly is this industrial demand going to look like in the future. Do you know much about like a lot of the applications that silver is going to be in great demand for in the future?
Yeah, broadly, I mean, just the Green New Deal. How about war? How much silver is in Tomahawk missiles? How much silver is used by the defense industry? The different uses are so widespread. They're medicinal uses. You can't do AI without silver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the data.
I mean, there's just so many uses that. Yeah, there's just so many uses. The demand has nowhere to go but up. If the world is going to go forward toward AI and not backwards toward, you know, horse and buggies.
So at some point then, if the price of silver, because Elon Musk tweeted something about a week ago, and it was something to the extent of this is bad because this is not good for business. Every Tesla has a few ounces of silver in it. And so a lot, he's worried because a lot of his companies require this metal. And that, is there a point where it potentially has negative effects in the economy and the government has to step in and say, okay, we can no longer, makes it illegal to trade monetary silver?
Yeah, that could certainly happen. Musk was not talking about price whatsoever. Price doesn't matter. It's whether they can get it or not.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of an ambiguous tweet, but
I think Gary, if we, pardon?
It was an ambiguous tweet. He didn't indicate whether or not it was due to demand or whether it was due to availability. He just vaguely said that this is not good. I don't think he specified whether it was the price or what the issue was. As a businessman, I would presume he's concerned about the price.
I think that, I don't think he's concerned about the price in any way, shape, or form. I don't think that matters. I mean, let's say that there's 10 ounces in a silver in a Tesla, and I don't know what the number is, but it doesn't matter whether they're paying $300 for that silver or $800 or $1,500. That doesn't matter. It's the availability. And that tweet, I believe, had to do with China announcing that they were not going to export any silver after January 1st. He's strictly talking about supply, does not care about price in any way, shape, or form. And that's where we're headed. We're headed toward a failure to deliver. And once there's a failure to deliver, silver that's held by investors is going to go totally into hiding. There won't be any silver being sold. And right now, in the last year, there's been a lot of silver sold from North American retail investors.
I think you're right. Now, just looking at it here, so I'm looking at the tweet, and it was a response that he gave to a guy who was talking about China restricting silver exports. So indeed, you are correct about that. Yeah, so we know that silver has all these industrial applications. What do you see as being other factors that might contribute? I mean, obviously, there's the war thing. Trump just announced that there's going to be a potentially $1.5 trillion military budget in 2027. And the guidance to military companies with respect to increasing their outputs. We know that silver's big. We know there's an AI arms race that is currently occurring. Is there any other factors that you think are bullish for silver in this market, or gold for that matter?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is supply and demand. The bottom line is you have markets all over the world that are trading higher than COMEX and LBMA. I mean, silver's changing hands in Shanghai, $4, $5, $6, $7 higher than COMEX, higher than LBMA. Same thing in Dubai and UAE, same thing in India. Same thing in Japan. Physical silver is trading above these paper markets. And what the physical markets are doing are exposing the fraudulent pricing of the Western paper system. And as long as there's a discount in the Western paper system, you're going to have buyers from all over the world stepping in, buying contracts and saying, I want my metal. And what I'm telling you is there's going to be a failure to deliver. When COMEX tells people we have more demand for delivery than we have ounces, it's a force majeure. We're going to settle with paper. And when they settle with paper, it's game over. It's game over for silver. Silver explodes in price. Same day, gold will go failure to deliver because, I can't get my silver. I'm going to get gold instead. That goes failure to deliver. And understand that these markets are all about trust. And if you tell investors who bought a contract where they were told they could present that contract for delivery of metal, and then they're told no, trust breaks. Confidence breaks. Fiat runs on confidence. The credit markets run on confidence. The entire system runs on confidence. The entire system will blow up. And it's been my thesis for 10 years that silver would be the market that does it. And it looks like that's happening now.
Do you think this is going to be like one seminal event, or is it going to be a series of events that unfolds? And when do you think that's going to happen, that this failure to deliver is going to occur?
Well, I think it'll certainly be this year. I think it'll be in the first half of the year. And I can't see getting through, say, March or April deliveries. Just looking at the delivery history. I mean, here we are in January. There's already 25 million ounces standing. And I think the total COMEX has, what, 107 or 117 million ounces, something like that.
And so they have 107. I'm just trying to understand.
Just understand. And understand this. Understand this. Silver is such a small market that worldwide, if you added all the production together from every country, every mine, it's 850 million ounces. So you're talking, what, $65-75 billion, which is up from a year ago, it was $25-30 billion. That is a ham sandwich in today's world. You just told me that Trump wants to expand the military budget to $1.5 trillion. Well, what does $65 or $70 billion look like compared to that? What does $65 or $70 billion look like compared to a corporate takeover? I mean, you've got corporate takeovers now that are stupid numbers. Silver is stupid small, which means a small amount of money can blow the market up.
And do you believe that if the silver price gets out of control, I guess what's your price target then for this year? But also, do you think that could cause that level of volatility could have ripple effects throughout the broader market? Could this, as some people are claiming, upend the entire system?
You're fixated on price. So let's talk about price. Let's say the price goes to 100 or 150 or 200. Pick a number. The shorts, the banking cabal that has been short silver forever, is getting killed. They're getting destroyed. They're losing billions. So there's your price side. That's ruining balance sheets of banks. When you talk about the delivery side or the availability side, that's like a no-brainer. If it fails to deliver, that's it. COMEX silver is done. And COMEX gold is done the same day. Then people are going to be wondering, did they oversell nickel? Did they oversell copper? Did they oversell wheat? Did they oversell pork bellies, et cetera, et cetera? What I'm trying to tell you is the day that silver fails to deliver is the beginning of the end, and it goes exponentially fast time wise from there because confidence breaks.
So you think that some of the mania right now on a lot of these silver channels is justified? You think that the price is going to go much higher in 2026?
Yeah, you asked me when, and you asked me a price. First off, nobody can tell you when. I mean, that's an impossibility unless we're early in a month and you see that what's standing for delivery is already approaching what they have available to deliver. So, you know, maybe you could predict it within a week or 2 weeks out by seeing that. You're asking me for, you know, what's my price target? I don't have a price target. Anybody who gives you a price is full of shit. Because nobody knows how much silver is available. Let's look at gold in dollars. The U.S. supposedly has 262 million ounces, 8,300 tons. It hasn't been audited since 1956. First off, why? Why not? Why has it not been audited? We were told it was too expensive, which is a joke. It's not been audited. So that 8,300 tons, I don't believe in any way, shape, or form it's there, but let's assume that it's there. And let's put that against the debt that's outstanding, $38, $39 trillion. You're pushing $150,000 an ounce to cover the debt. But we don't know how much more debt's going to be piled on. We don't have any idea how much more money supply is going to be piled on. So how do you give a credible, I think gold's going to be $67.50 this year and silver's going to be $123. Who knows? Nobody knows that. All I know is it's going to, the price is going to go higher. And at some point in time, the price will be 100% fixed in the cash markets. The paper markets, LBMA and COMEX, will be irrelevant.
Interesting. So in terms of gold, then, you believe that gold will also continue to go up this year?
Well, I'm going to ask you, give me a bear case. How does gold go back down to 3,500 or 3,000 or 2,500? Who's going to sell it?
Mm-hmm.
Where's that supply going to come from?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of central banks are still buying, retail still buying, banks are still advising people to buy it. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of bear cases at this point.
Central banks are de-dollarizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't see much downside risk at this point. I mean, some people might say it's run a little hot, but I would say that there was this pent-up demand and suppression that is finally being realized. And
exactly.
Yeah, so I don't really personally see. I try to.
Gold and silver have been suppressed.
Sorry, say again?
Gold and silver have been suppressed for years and years and years by the paper markets. Now what the price is telling you, and you can see that because of the availability for delivery, that price suppression also suppressed supply. It suppressed mines. Mines didn't have the capital to go out and drill, find new deposits, build plants. They didn't have the capital to do that. Now what you're seeing is the cash markets are proving or showing the fraud of the paper markets, selling something they did not have.
So as miners then convert some of this newfound liquidity into expanding their mining operations, how long do you expect that that will actually have a effect on the markets in that it brings the price down a little bit? Like, how long does it take to get a mine going and start, you know, increasing production?
Well, with an existing mine, you're probably talking 3 years, maybe five. With a just piece of raw land that you've mapped and you've discovered gold, you're talking at least 5 to 7 years.
So a lot of these mining investments then won't really be maturing for many, many years. So that shouldn't have a effect on the price for the foreseeable future anyways. Do you have any other expectations with respect to market volatility this year? Are you expecting there to be a stock market collapse, a banking crisis? What do you foresee in your crystal ball?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball. I just put dots together. And the dots being put together, when silver fails to deliver, if you believe that stock markets are going to continue to remain open, I think that's a big mistake in thinking.
Remain
open? Once these fail, right, I think markets will close. Have you read The Great Taking?
No, please elaborate on that.
The Great Taking by David Rogers Webb. It was out about a year and a half ago. It was all over the internet. I've probably posted, I don't know, 7 or 8 articles on that. I just reposted one yesterday, that the DTC is now going to tokenize stock certificates. The Great Taking in a nutshell, and you can read it online. You can watch an interview online. Will not take more than an hour of your time. The Great Taking, because the laws have been put into effect that when you deposit money with a broker and buy a stock, that stock's not yours. It's for your benefit, but it's on the broker's balance sheet. When you go into a bank and you give them money, you are no longer classified as a depositor, which used to be the number one concern. Now, as being considered a lender, that's the way the law reads, you are lending to the bank. You are not only a creditor, but you're the lowest creditor on the totem pole.
Right. So that the investment firm will own that stock certificate? Is that what you're saying? And you just get a token that kind of like an IOU?
Exactly. It's for your benefit. And they're on the bank's balance sheet. They're on the broker's balance sheet. And when a bank or a broker gets into trouble legally, and you have no recourse whatsoever anywhere in the Western world, legally, they can take your funds to save their ass.
Right.
And that's why you want to get stock certificates in your hand. It's like a title. It's like a deed.
Yes.
And but do yourself a favor and read and learn about the Great Taking. Your subscribers should learn about The Great Taking by David Rogers Webb. It is not speculation. Those laws are 100% on the books and the ink is dry. And that's where they came up with the phrase, you will own nothing and be happy. I know how you're going to own nothing. I'm not sure how you're going to be happy unless they put something in the water.
So what you're saying is that if people have money in the bank, or if they have money through like an investment portfolio that's facilitated by a bank, that if there is a crisis, they basically take a bank holiday, and that money now, because you lent it to the bank, legally speaking, they're not on the line or obligated to give it back to you in any form.
Well, they are on the line to their creditors, but the creditors that they're on the line to are senior to you. You're last in line. Think about this. Let me hear this. This will explain it on the broker side. So there's brokers out there that say, doesn't matter how much you trade, your commission is going to be $7.95.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see brokers flying around in private planes. They got big buildings. The overhead is massive. How does that get paid for by $7.95? It doesn't. What they do when you buy a stock before the end of the day, that stock is lent out and they're earning in margin interest on your stock.
Right.
But it's not your stock. It's their stock and they have the ability to lend it.
So how hard is it to get a stock certificate for anybody who is invested? Like, is it quite the process?
It'll take about 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending upon the transfer agent. But what you do is you call your broker and you say, I want a DRS, direct register security, that you want to directly register your securities with the transfer agent. That's an electronic process. They send it to the transfer agent, like DTC or Odyssey or any of the transfer agents. Once they have your shares on its book entry is what it's called. Once it's in book entry, you call your broker or you call the transfer agent or contact them and you tell them, I want a certificate. And that should take a couple of weeks to get your shares. And then you're out of the system.
A lot of people are accustomed to the fast pace of trading. You know, I push a button and all of a sudden it's sold. So we're lured in by the convenience of the instantaneous ability to transact. But what you're saying is that if there's one of these crises, you don't hold it. You don't own it, essentially.
You cannot day trade this way. You're not going to be able to day trade. Because if you want to sell your certificate, you're going to have to send it back to your broker. It'll take a couple of days to authenticate. And then maybe 5 business days after you actually get it to them, you'll be able to sell it. So no, you won't be able to day trade. But guess what? When the system comes down, you're out of the system. Mm-hmm. And this is something Jim Sinclair talked about beginning in, 2004, 2005, 2006. And we talked extensively about it from 2015 to 2020. Have as few intermediaries between you and your money. And that's one of the allures of gold and silver. Guess what? The system went down, but you got gold in your hand or you got silver in your hand. You have money. Now let's go one step further and let's say the system does hold together for a couple of years. And we get to the point where we're forced into digital currencies. You're in Canada, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. Well, you saw what they did to the truckers, right?
Absolutely. Froze their bank accounts.
Well, you and I are truckers. Your account, my account, we have this conversation. They'll just shut your money off. None for you.
Mm-hmm.
It was yours, but you are a bad boy. And your credit score, your social credit score is too low. You're just going to have to die. And they will shut you off. That's where we're headed.
Wow. Scary, scary stuff. So, you know, if a person did want
it's
to get
factual.
A stock, it almost forces a person then to make real prudent long-term financial decisions, because if you're committing to get a stock certificate, you must believe that you know, you're like a holding like a Warren
Correct.
Buffett in that case. You're not doing this kind of swing trading stuff.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And you cannot do it with ETFs, and you cannot do it with mutual funds. You can only do it with individual securities. Probably 90-95% of individual stocks, you can get the certificate.
Interesting. So now yourself personally, like in terms of holding the physical metal, there's security concerns with that for a lot of people. Like
sure.
Myself personally, I don't own a lot of silver and gold, but if I did, I would be concerned about how would I custody it, or would I get somebody else to do it? And then if shit really hit the fan, do I want somebody else holding the metal, maybe, you know, far away from me? What is your solution for that?
That's why you don't hold all your metal in one place. You have some on hand. You pick a couple depositories in the U.S. and maybe a depository outside of the U.S. and you spread it around. I store in North Dakota. There are several vaults in North Dakota, which is the only state that's not part of the Federal Reserve System. Now, does that mean it's totally impervious? No, but it does mean that federal agents can't walk in and say, tell us who your customers are and how much they have. Because they're not part of the Federal Reserve System. There's no banking officials that can walk in and say, tell us who your customers are.
Could you see the government, though, at some point trying to confiscate and then through those companies trying to confiscate people's stuff?
Yeah, that's very possible. I don't think that's probable. I think it's much more probable that they change the tax laws and say there's a 90% capital gain tax on whatever your gains are.
Right.
And what I'm telling you is if the system has come down, and assuming that there's still an IRS or the equivalent in Canada that's operating, I'm not sure there would be, but if it's still operating, so you pay your taxes, you still have capital. Whereas if it was in the system, it's gone. Your institution failed and took your money with it.
Yeah, that would certainly force a possible sell-off.
It's also way more difficult to confiscate physical metal because that's a physical activity. It's not just pushing a couple computer keystrokes on a board and all of a sudden your account's wiped out.
Yeah, it seems like they would certainly go after the bigger fish if that was the strategy.
Right. They'll go after the ETFs. They'll go after SLV. They'll go after, you know, they'll go after the easy, low-hanging fruit.
Do you have any thoughts on what's going on geopolitically and how that all factors in here with global conflict seemingly on many continents now? What are your thoughts on that and how that factors into the silver and gold markets?
Well, it's geopolitically, the world is definitely heating up. There's no question about it. I mean, I'm not privy to conversations. I don't know, what's really being said behind closed doors. But you can see the temperature rising. Historically, wars have started over, you know, geopolitical events. So, I mean, that's on the table. And gold and silver, they cannot default. And these fiat currencies. So you got two sides to a conflict. One side's going to lose or at least be badly battered. What happens to that currency?
It goes to zero.
Right. And gold and silver do nothing. All they are is an ounce, a proven ounce that's minted into a bar, a coin, what have you. It's proof of labor, capital, equipment that's already been used. So there's no question. They don't change. An ounce is an ounce today, 100 years ago, 100 years from now. What changes are the fiat currencies, the values, that their purchasing power, their purchasing values.
So is your strategy as a personal like metals investor, is it more to kind of like dollar cost average, or do you just buy at any opportunity? Do you wait for dips, or is it just because you have this long-term bull case that you just buy whenever?
Well, whenever you have capital, unless you want to leave it in the system, you get it out of the system into gold and silver. I mean, when people ask me, how much should I put into gold? How much should I put into silver or gold and silver collectively? My answer now is whatever you don't want to lose.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of banks would have prior to 2024 recommended, or not banks, but investment coaches would say 10%, but now people are saying 20%. But you're saying pretty much anything not in any other committed endeavor like stocks or bonds or whatever, you're saying it.
Put
it
all I'm saying is get off the railroad tracks.
Right.
That's it. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, that's what you're saying today. I think anybody in my audience who is a gold and silver investor is going to be happy to hear what you're saying. Unfortunately, though, we know that doesn't necessarily bode well for everything else, because gold and silver going up are really just an indication of the dollar going down in a lot of ways. Are people actually going to get ahead with gold and silver investments, or is it just simply a matter of retaining the wealth that you have?
To those who are hoping gold and silver explode in price, my response is be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
That's first off. You've already seen since the year 2000, anybody who bought gold, anybody who bought silver is ahead of everything else. I mean, look at the S&P, bonds, or whatever, it doesn't matter. Your purchasing power has already increased. But the reason you own gold, the reason you own silver in physical form, not held amongst the banks, is so that when this goes down, you don't go down with it. You're going to be left with capital. You're basically going to be a bank when the system reboots.
Is there any indicators that you look at when you first get up in the morning that help guide your decisions throughout the day as it pertains to finance? Like, what are some of the chief indicators that people should be looking at in terms of market volatility versus stability?
Yeah, but I mean, there's a few, but I think the most important one for me over the last 6 or 8 months has been, I want to know what the Japanese 10-year and 30-year bond are doing. Mm-hmm. And they're blowing out to the upside. And if you recall, the Japanese yen carry trade is what reflated the system in the first place. That's blowing up in their faces because the carry cost, interest rates are going higher, and so is the yen. So it's a double whammy. It's a double loser for anyone who borrowed thinking it was a free trade. It's not a free trade. It's going to turn out to be a death trade.
So if a person was to see the Japanese yields going down, then would that indicate that maybe we should expect a bit of a pullback in gold and silver?
Yeah, if you look at the Japanese, the yield curve, if you look at it, gold and silver have been not exactly in lockstep, but, you know, generally the same direction. And it makes sense. I mean, if the yield's going higher, that's showing risk in that sector, in the carry trade. So the more risk there is, the more you want to own gold and silver.
In terms of the types of bullion versus coins, do you have any preference for either bars versus coins? Is there any advantage to paying the extra premium to get smaller denominations?
Yeah, for Americans, and I'll speak just to Americans on this, you want U.S. Mint lineage coin. You want either Eagles or preferably pre-1933 Liberties and St. Gaudens. Those are considered collectibles. You're not a hoarder. It is not bullion. And if you want silver, junk silver, hands down, is the best form. That's pre-1965 dimes, quarters, and half dollars. For instance, 14 dimes equals 1 ounce. So in a system down scenario, would you rather have 14 dimes or one eagle or one bar or what have you? It gives you 14 transactions. So you're not giving a 1 ounce to a farmer and then you're extending credit to him, hoping to get more eggs or more whatever in the future. Junk is readily recognizable. Everybody knows what a quarter or a dime looks like. As long as it says 1964 or earlier, that's your authentication that it's real. I mean, can you really authenticate a bar or a round in a system down? No. But with dimes and quarters, the date's right on there. You know whether it's real or not. You can drop it on the counter and you can hear the difference between a current dime and you know, the older dimes. It is U.S. Mint lineage. They cannot be counterfeited because they gotta look scruffy. They were in people's pockets for years and years and years. So they better not be shiny. If they're shiny, they are fake. It's just the best form for an American to own. And currently, because of so much selling from the 70s and 80s, that was the only way Americans could buy silver back then. We got over $50 or close to $50, and people came out of the woodwork selling bags of junk silver. So it is the cheapest form currently, and it's the best form. And that's what you want. You want the best for the least.
Is there any tax differences in the U.S. with bullion versus the coin,
no,
like the numismatic, or is there?
No.
So capital gains all the way through?
It's a short-term capital gain. There is no long-term. You get older for 50 years, and it's not a long-term gain.
So you guys do pay a certain amount of tax. How much tax do you pay on like a capital gains for gold?
I believe it's 28%. I mean, you'd have to check with an accountant on that. I think it's 28%, but long-term capital gains are 20%. So there's a break there, you know, if you were doing stocks or bonds or what have you.
Okay. Where can people find more information about what you do? And I know you're doing, are you doing quite a few interviews? Or like I've seen you here and there on various podcasts, but is that something you're doing frequently? And is there a website that people can go to?
Yeah, I do two or three, sometimes more interviews a week. You can go to my website. It's simply BillHolter.com. This is your prepper channel. I've got a section of my website called Grizzly's Corner that has got some really good prep information. Go to that. You can contact me through the website, or if you want to contact me regarding gold or silver trading, you can go to my business email. It's bholter@proton.me.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you coming out today, and you certainly made my day in terms of the prospect of what little silver and gold I have going a little bit higher. But unfortunately, like you said, there's definitely some bad things on the horizon with respect to the markets that we all need to continue to prepare for. So thanks a lot for coming out, Bill. And I will post those links for anybody who's interested in learning more about what you do in the description section below.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Take care.
The best way to support this channel is to support yourself by gearing up at CanadianPreparedness.com, where you'll find high-quality survival gear at the best prices, no junk, and no gimmicks. Use discount code PREPPINGGEAR for 10% off. Don't forget, the strong survive, but the prepared thrive. Stay safe.